You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. Thank you for listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, David Ramil. Please remember to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts and to get the latest episodes. 2 weeks, eight games, NBA history in the making. The Miami Heat will be beginning play of their eight seeding games on 1 o'clock Saturday against the Nuggets. So to help you get started, I'm recording a mailbag episode to answer your questions about what to look out for from key players, concerns, and then I'll give you my prediction about the team's record after what will be an incredible couple of weeks. I had a little trouble recording this as early as I would have liked, but you can still use this to help you get ready for the restart. Plus, you know, I'll be bringing you a recap of every game, as well as episodes in the latest news, rumors, and more. Watching basketball, competitive basketball, for the last 2 days has really gotten me excited for what the Heat can do. The scrimmages were fun to see, but this has been something completely different from the first game against with the Utah Jazz, a team that Miami struggled against during those scrimmages. That looked pretty interesting. And, of course, the two L.A. teams matching up on Thursday night. Some pretty interesting games on Friday as well. But it's just been really fun to see competitive basketball again. The product on the floor has been fantastic. Doesn't look any different than what a regular season game should be. It has a really nice feel to it, and players have been phenomenal. There's been so much between the messages about social injustices and Black Lives Matter and everything else that's been going on around basketball, and now this is just, it's culminated perfectly. I can't tell you how excited I've been, and I hope you're just as excited, especially when it comes to what Miami can do during the next couple of weeks. Let's get started with this question that comes from Jay Jacobson, who asks, do you anticipate Miami's defense tightening up now, assuming that Eric Spoelstra probably has an idea of his rotations? I'm thinking intensity will ramp up, so hoping their defense does too. Well, the players have spoken about very intense practices over the last couple days. Following the loss of the Memphis Grizzlies in the third scrimmage, you knew that Eric Spoelstra was going to really, really try to instill a whole new work ethic, a new commitment to defense and everything else. They've probably been watching video nonstop. They've been working on some things during practice. Players have spoken about it. And it's been pretty evident that there's a renewed sense of importance here. That this is there's a focus, and it's absolutely on winning. The three scrimmages were, again, kind of a warm-up leading into something much more important. And I think there's a full, complete understanding that these next eight seeding games do matter. The scrimmages offered a glimpse of a chance to play against a different team in a semi-competitive way. And while there were some good and bad things that we saw, notably Duncan Robinson's shooting and then some bad in the defense, these games leading up over the next eight seeding games, those absolutely mean something more to the players. And so to Jade's point, then, the intensity around the team has picked up, and I think it will continue to do so. If you've seen the last couple of days of live basketball, and again, these are during the eight seeding games for other teams other than Miami, it's been very, very competitive. Guys have been fully engaged, whether they're missing key players or not. It's been very, very intense. And there's an understanding that these games do mean something. And so I can't get that point across enough, that there's an understanding here that there's a lot at stake. I don't think there's any team here, with the exception of maybe the lower rung teams like the Washingtons or Brooklyns, that are missing key players. I think every other team believes they have a chance, whether it's the current sixth or seventh seed in the West or something along those lines. Teams like Dallas, Houston, no matter what their records were in the regular season before the season came to an end in mid-March, everybody believes they have a chance to compete for a title, because you never know what could happen in the playoffs. A key player goes down on another team, and next thing you know, one of those lower-seeded teams might have a chance at getting to the finals in the respective conferences and potentially earning a berth in the NBA Finals. So, despite all that increased intensity, I still have concerns about the team's defense. I think if you heard my recap of the Grizzlies' loss, it was pretty evident that we saw continuing issues there at the point of attack. The guard play has been somewhat spotty. I don't think there's been any changes to the rotations or to the rosters that could facilitate or make any kind of necessary huge improvement. At this point, what we have on this roster is what we're going to wind up with during the course of the season. There's no changing this. Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero, and Kendrick Nunn aren't all of a sudden going to become elite level defenders. They're not going to become Kyle Lowry or something to that effect, or Chris Paul. They are occasionally good on defense, mostly not able to contain that point of attack. And I've mentioned this again. If you didn't hear the recap, please go ahead and do so. But either way, my biggest issue is that they're not able to contain or stay in front of ball handlers that create opportunities for themselves or others. And so given that breakdown in defense, you either have to have somebody sag off of their own opponent and then help one of those guards, or the guard ball handler can create opportunities along the perimeter. They can kick it out, swing the ball, and that winds up leading to an open shot from the perimeter and a made three-pointer, which is what we saw against the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, not a particularly good shooting team, but they had a very, very good shooting team, a good shooting day, rather, against the Heat. And although that might have been fueled by some kind of need for revenge against Andre Iguodala or something like that, the reality is I think Miami's defensive breakdowns really facilitated that kind of offensive explosion. If you look at what made this team so good early in the season, I think a lot of that had to do with the element of surprise. There's no major difference in personnel than what we saw, from what we saw during the last scrimmage, with the exception of Justice Winslow and James Johnson occasionally playing, and neither of them really much of a factor. Johnson was in and out of the lineup. He didn't really play all that much. Justice certainly was out of the lineup. He played the first few games of the season, then was hurt, and then came back, and then was hurt again. So it's not like we had this great, strong defense here. We just had, I think, that element of surprise where people didn't know what to expect from this team, either offensively or defensively. And I think the offense, as cliche as it might sound, kind of made things a lot easier defensively because it kept opposing teams on their heels. You weren't sure what to expect of a Kendrick Nunn who was bursting onto the scene, or a Duncan Robinson who all of a sudden just became one of the best shooters in NBA history. And so they had to kind of, react a little differently. The scouting report wasn't complete on what this team was. And so I think you had teams kind of not sure exactly about what to do next on offense or on defense. And so that really helped Miami quite a bit. And then as teams started to become a little bit more accustomed to what Miami was able to do, they got a little bit of deeper understanding of how to exploit seams in the defense. And then that's where we start to see most of Miami's problems. I think they've been able to figure out ways of scoring against this team, particularly exploiting matchups at the guard position and center position. The team's two best defenders in the starting lineup, Jimmy and Bam, they're obviously very, very good defenders, but they can only do so much. And so opponents have targeted Duncan Robinson. That's why you see whether Duncan, I don't think Duncan's a bad defender necessarily. I think he can give up points, but you start to see a lot of wing players. Look, I hate to bring this up, because I know it might seem like it's racially motivated or anything like that, but I'll recall Jimmy Butler saying this about a favorite teammate of his, J.J. Redick, during his season in Philadelphia. They were, Butler was recently on Redick's podcast, or maybe not recently. It seems like time has kind of gone away from me. That was a couple of months ago. But either way, he said that he was explicitly pissed off at having a white guard, a white player guard him. And I know that's ridiculous, but I think there's an understanding that, maybe white players are a little slow, maybe not as athletic as black players. And so when a black player sees Duncan Robinson, they're probably a little pissed off. They're probably a little concerned and think that this is a matchup that can dominate. Duncan's not a bad defender. He's got the length overall to impact an opposing player. But I think you're going to start to see a lot of field goal. Well, we've seen this over the course of the season. We've seen a lot of field goal attempts at Duncan's expense. And again, if you have one breakdown defensively, there's only so much everybody else can do to help out if Duncan gets taken to the rim and you don't have a rim protector. That's why that center position has also been a problem. Myers has been great at calling out opposing, opponents when there were screens and things of that sort. He's very good at vocalizing where a ball handler is going, but he's not a rim protector in the classic sense. And so he can get exploited there, and there's only so much. They don't have that kind of protection at the rim. Again, Bam has to sag off his guy. And looking at the four position, whereas Bam is mostly roaming around on defense, he's playing the power forward position ostensibly. He has to, sag off guys that are generally considered pretty good shooters. You look around the league, and there are a lot of players at the four who can spot up from three-point land. And so that just makes things difficult for everybody. One breakdown on the defense kind of has this cascade effect, and all of a sudden you're just reeling here. We saw it against the Grizzlies. We saw it before the season came to an end in March. So as for Jade's question, I don't know if Spo's necessarily set his rotations. Yeah, the roster's back, but there's still going to be changes here and there, as well as the usual knowns like foul trouble or potential injury. And of course, there's always the hot hand, a matchup that Spoelstra might like to capitalize on. So he's going to make changes here. I think he said that this has been, that it is fluid, and that's the term that I'm thinking of as well when I look at this team. He has a loose idea of what to do with his rotations, but that'll be dictated on a game-to-game basis. I think while Spoelstra can be a little rigid when it comes to rotations, I think he'll understand the nature, the unusual nature of the bubble, and he's going to make some changes to the rotation. There's going to be problems on occasion, especially with guards giving up drives to the basket. It's been there for weeks before the season ended, and it's been there during the scrimmages, but I still think it'll be better. Everybody on this team understands what's at stake here, and because Spo and the coaching staff will have them well prepared, I just think there's too much evidence that this team can play at a high level to steadily discontinue that. And even when the guards occasionally stumble, I still expect Jimmy and Bam to pick up the slack, as well as Derek Jones, Andre Iguodala, and Jay Crowder. So, Jay, to your question, yes, I think the defense will improve. I think there's still going to be moments where you go, damn it, you're going to give up a drive, and that's going to lead to a wide-open three-pointer. That's just a reality around the league. Too many great shooters on every team. I think they're going to find ways to capitalize on holes in the defense. I think it's going to tighten up to some degree. I think we're start to see more of what made Miami very, very good at defending the three-point shot over the course of the regular season, and I think they're going to have a renewed intensity and focus that'll help them occasionally overcompensate for individual players' weaknesses. But who is Miami's X Factor? Who will step up unexpectedly? I'll tell you that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder to listen to, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. This next question comes in from Henry, who writes in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Who is the X factor for the Heat as they progress towards the playoffs? Well, I did answer this question to some degree a couple days ago. So, Henry, I'm sorry you didn't hear that podcast, but I'll remind all of my listeners what that answer was. Plus, I'll also get to this other question that comes to me from Grantos Fandango. He asks, which player do you think will have the most unexpected impact for the Heat in the opening games? And at first, when I saw these two questions that were sent in on the same day, reasonably close to one another, I almost assumed that they were asking the same question. You think of an X factor and it's all of a sudden, who's going to step up that you don't necessarily see coming. But when I see Grantos or Fandango, I'm not sure which is the first or last name there. When I see that question, who's going to have the most unexpected impact? I don't necessarily see it as an X factor. I think the X factor to Henry's original question is, as I mentioned a couple days ago, Duncan Robinson. He is just too potent a weapon on offense to discount. And I think that's a big part of it, is that he's going to have really, really big games where if he's knocking down those shots, and we've already seen this over the course of the regular season, he makes things. I'll go back to a point from a couple years ago. There was that really, when the teams were particularly mediocre over the last couple seasons and they were relying so heavily during the 41-41 stretch, the year after that when they made the playoffs, they were relying on Wayne Ellington to bail them out of situations. They would just get down, they would give up big leads, and all of a sudden Wayne would come in there, just light them up, score a couple three-pointers off the bench, and they'd get right back into it, and that was why they were able to win a handful more of games, because of Ellington's performances. Duncan, not the same thing, and then of course he's in the starting lineup, but he is such a potent weapon that he does change the course of it changes how defenses guard everybody else. You have to focus more on Duncan. there is a gravity there, and I keep using that term. Hopefully you know what that is, but he draws multiple defenders to him every time he has the ball in his hands because he is so dangerous, because he can do so much. And as a result, that creates those same kind of mismatches and seams in the defense that I talked about being a weakness in Miami. It leads to weaknesses in opponents as well. You have to respect Duncan when he has the ball in his hands. He's constantly moving off multiple screens, and then kind of throws everybody off. You have somebody help out. If somebody gets caught in a secondary screen or something like that, next thing you know, you have Duncan being guarded by a big. That creates a mismatch there that you can exploit. Bam can roll to the rim, things of that sort. And so that's, to me, the big X factor there. To Fandango's question, as far as the most unexpected impact, a little different than the X factor here. I can expect that Duncan is going to be the X factor. I know that Duncan is going to change the course of games because of his incredible offense. You can hope that he has an impact on defense as well. I don't think that that's necessarily going to be the case, but given what he can do offensively, he is Miami's X factor. He needs to score in bunches. He needs to at least go 4 of 7, 4 of 9 from the field in order to make an impact. And hopefully we'll have a lot of those performances. Ideally, he'd have one of those 9 of 14 shooting games where he just constantly makes his three-point shot, or it just feels like he's always going to make those shots. But those have been infrequent, and you can't rely on that being a steady source of your offense. Although, again, he's going to have a lot of opportunities. He has a green light. He shoots most of his shots attempts from the three-point line. You're going to see him mixing it up on occasion as he drives to the rim. I think that's part of a missing part of the scouting report when it comes to Duncan, is that he can put the ball on the floor and he can create plays for others. He's a nifty passer, if nothing else. But when I think of the unexpected player to kind of step up and have a big impact for Miami, it's not any of the all-stars. We know what we're going to get out of Bam and Jimmy, although one of them is going to have a big game and the other one may not. Both of them might have a good game on occasion. And I think we know what we're going to get out of wing players like Jay Crowder and Iguodala. I've liked what I've seen from Iguodala as far as his overall defense playmaking. Hopefully you get a big shooting game from him. I think also what you're going to get from Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn is basically what we've been getting from them all season. If there's a player that I think is going to have an unexpected impact for Miami, I think it's going to be Kelly Olynyk. I think he is the player who's looked most impressive to me and most consistently impressive, which has always been the knock on Kelly, is that he's just never been able to string any kind of steady performances there to make it look like he's consistently overcome any issues as far as his defense is concerned, or his shooting being much more consistent. And so I think you're going to have a string of games where Kelly's going to be a huge factor for Miami off the bench, doing a lot of what we expect from Myers Leonard and Duncan Robinson, is that, every time Kelly has a ball in his hands, and you've seen players talk about this. Jay Crowder spoke about this when they talked about, they asked Jay during a recent Zoom conference call, what it was like to have a sense of familiarity with Olynyk, having played together in Boston. And I think, Crowder spoke about, Tyler Hero also mentioned this recently, is that whenever they see Kelly with the ball in his hands, they know he can do something with it. He's not going to be out there a stiff, unsure of what to do with the ball in his hands. He can put the ball down. He can make plays. He can create off the dribble handoff. You know that's a part of his repertoire. I think it's been mitigated over the last year or so, but I think we're going to see a little bit more of that. And I think you're going to have a couple games there where Olynyk makes a huge impact. And that, to me, is most unexpected. Look, I can hope that Myers will be able to replicate a lot of what he did last season with Portland. That's a little hard to expect. Those performances were such an outlier. Even in Myers' great career in Portland, up to that point, I don't think he'd had any kind of steady 20-plus point stretch there where he was just such a deadly threat on offense. But I think with Olynyk, he can have the big game. You've never been able to see them string together consistently. There's a 20-point game, then there's a 5-point game, then there's a 4-point game, then there's an 18-point game, then there's a 12-point game, then there's a 2-point game. And that's the reality when it comes to Kelly, is that it's been very, very inconsistent up and down. And so given that he's in great shape, that he's feeling very good, that he's healthy, that he's been able to watch what he eats during the quarantine, and that he's been able to practice, he's been a steady practice. He's been there in Miami when the training camp opened up. He was there in the bubble from early on. He's been as active a player as you can be, and I think it's shown during the last three scrimmages. And so, Fandango, to your point, I think Olynyk is going to be a huge factor. I considered Goran Dragic as well. Maybe you can make a case for Derrick Jones if he has one of those games where he's shooting well from the perimeter, but that's just been so unreliable. Like, that has not been a steady part of his offense at all. You just never know. You're going to have a game, I hope, where Derrick is going to go 4 of 7, maybe 4 of 9. You know, he's going to occasionally have a couple shots fall for him, and he's going to feel comfortable taking those shots, but that all depends on the kind of playing time that he gets, and I think he might be one of those players that loses a little bit of playing time in the rotation, given that you want to give minutes to Tyler Herro and Kelly and Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder, etc. So, you know, other than that, I don't know that there are many good options. I don't think KZ Okpala is going to be the factor everybody's hoping for. I don't think Solomon Hill is going to get playing time despite his experience and everything else. So, given what we've seen of the rotation over the first, you know, last three scrimmages, rather, and how, you know, Spoelstra has spoken so well of Kelly and his performance during training camp, I think you're going to see increased opportunity for him, and he's going to be in a position to make the most of it, and hopefully he will. I'll give you my prediction about Miami's record during the 8 seeding games in the next segment, so stay tuned for that. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. A reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Just can't help but get excited about what's going to happen in the next few days, next few hours. When you're listening to this, you'll be hours away from a matchup against the Denver Nuggets. They're going to be a surprise team that's also seen in some circles as a contender for a berth in the finals, if not an outright title contender. But this last question comes courtesy of Al, who asks, out of 8 seeding games, how many do you think the Heat will win? The Heat held a record of 41-24 before the season ended in mid-March. They started off hot, cooled off considerably, and then they struggled following the All-Star break, even after having made a mid-season trade. Of course, none of that matters, and that's why it's so hard to predict what will happen during the next 8 games. If any of you have seen the action so far during the first 2 days of actual basketball, you've seen that most games have been very, very competitive. There have been some double-digit deficits, particularly in losses by the Kings, the Wizards, and the Nets, but those three teams have something in common. They've been experiencing injuries to key players, they're largely viewed as the worst teams within the bubbles. I think the Kings obviously didn't have much of a chance in the West. The Wizards have already lost key players in Bradley Beal. Davis Bertans is sitting out. John Wall is out. The Nets are without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. So they're not expected to really compete during the next 8 games. They're there because they kind of have to be, because they're going to collect a paycheck, and I understand they're going to try to be competitive for the remaining guys on this roster. You know they're going to do their best and to try and compete, but the reality is they just don't have the overall talent, and so that's why those losses have been particularly glaring as far as the large deficits for each of those respective teams. But when you look at the other games, again, the Los Angeles games, the Milwaukee-Boston matchup, those have been very, very competitive, very tight. And I say this because I think Miami will be in a tight battle in each of their 8 games. They just don't face any of those three weak teams, although you could make a case that potentially the Pacers might fit in that category. Miami faces them twice. They might be without Domantas Sabonis. Nobody knows what's going on with his plantar fascia. Victor Oladipo, still unconfirmed to participate during the seeding games, although I expect him to play if he sits out. Clearly, they've got some holes there in that roster, and so Indiana all of a sudden goes from being a 5th seed to a team that looks more like an 8th seed. They're not going to fall out of the playoff picture altogether, but they are going to struggle to compete against some of the best teams in the league, especially when they face a team like Miami. Miami's schedule is as follows. They start off with Denver, obviously, then they go to Toronto 2 days later. Then, on a back-to-back, they face the Boston Celtics, who they've faced twice before on back-to-backs and lost to twice before. Milwaukee is next after 2 days' rest. Then Phoenix, Indiana, Oklahoma City before wrapping up the season in Indiana. sorry, not in Indiana, obviously, that all these games will be played in Orlando. But one of these teams is going to be assigned the home court designation. It doesn't really matter. I think players have largely been able to tune out the screens in the background and the kind of background noise that you know might define a home type experience, even within the Orlando bubble. None of that really matters. But what's Miami's incentive to continue to play hard? Well, overall, it's to gain a third seed. Obviously, while there may not be any kind of home court advantage at any point during either the eight seeding games or the playoffs, to gain a third seed might lead to a better matchup against a weaker six seed opponent. In the first round of the playoffs, you get to avoid Milwaukee outright, who's a lock for the first seed in the Eastern Conference. I think you want to be able to establish, a kind of, not, again, home court advantage, but you want to be able to avoid your stronger opponents right away. You know Miami's going to be competitive, of course, but you also want them to establish trends in the right direction leading up to the playoffs. You want to see those rotations tighten, according to, you know, Eric Spoelstra. You want to see him have a comfort level as to who's going to be able to perform and in what ways. I think you want to also see the defense trend upwards, especially given what we've seen over the last couple weeks. And you want to continue to build chemistry. That's just the reality. You want to see Bam out there, fluid, in great shape. I know he looked pretty solid in his first and only outing during the scrimmages. He said he was going to need one more game to get back into it. He doesn't get that opportunity, but we'll see how he fares against Denver in just a few hours. And as he continues to build in that chemistry and get along with other players that he might not have experienced much playing time with. So that should be very, very interesting. You know Miami, again, is going to be competitive. Of course, they're not going to tank. They're not going to throw games. They're not going to sit players or anything like that, with the exception of one last game in the season, but that's something I'll talk about later on. So what's going to be a major disadvantage for Miami? The lack of home court. They frankly have just been very, very good at home and not so good away from that. And so I think they need that kind of energy. The players in this roster respond to that kind of energy a little bit better. And I know you could say that of almost every team, that they do better at home than they do away from that. But you look at Philadelphia, they've had a huge disparity in that sense too, where they're very, very good at home and very mediocre away from it. And I think Miami fits in that category as well. So that is a huge disadvantage. But I think Miami also has a major advantage that they have Jimmy Butler. He's going to get to the line. We have a superstar on the team that will get calls in his favor. And I think that is huge for Miami, something we have not had in a number of years. It's going to be great to see what Butler can do. We've seen tightly contested, called games rather, during the first couple of days of renewed play, and I think Jimmy's going to be able to work the refs pretty well. He's going to get the calls in his favor, and if he can do that, he can shift a game because of his offense. He looks great offensively. He feels comfortable. You know he's ready. I think he wants this opportunity so much. This is his first real taste of being able to carry a team in a crucial, unusual situation. He's always stepped up in the playoffs. He's always stepped up in clutch situations. I think the next eight games are going to be a glimpse of what the very best of what Jimmy Butler can be. And given what we don't know, there's always going to be X factors here. A player could test positive for any reason, or there's an injury to a key player. Miami is well suited to compete with every team, though, regardless of whether you view that there's a disparity in talent. I know a lot of media does not see Miami as the most talented team. I can understand that perspective, but I think they're going to be very, very well prepared. And so that's why I think there's going to be very, very close games during the next eight seeding games. Even against the Phoenix Suns, I just think that that team can get hot. They can shoot well from the perimeter. And if that's the case, you'll start to see, you know, teams where they'll be able to close those big leads that Miami is able to build up and has traditionally built up over the course of the season. Losses are going to happen, especially if the defense continues to be exposed. So my final prediction, given everything that I've just talked about, I think Miami is in a really good place. They've got the roster. They've got the coaching. They've got so many things that they can take advantage of. I still see a record of 5-3 playing out here. The three losses will be to the Toronto Raptors. I think that's an afternoon game at 1:30 on Monday, 2 days after their first game of the season against Denver. And I think that's going to throw this team off a little bit. I think you're going to see Milwaukee a couple days later. Miami will bounce back to beat Boston in the second game of the back-to-back set. But then 2 days later, they're going to face Milwaukee. And I think the Bucks are going to look for revenge there, having been beaten by Miami twice already, wanting to prove and hear that, even well-known media like Jeff Van Gundy think that Miami has a chance to knock off the Bucks. I think you're going to see the very best of Adetokunbo, where he's going to try and take advantage of the matchups there. And it's going to be interesting. Miami is going to be as competitive as possible. I still give the Bucks the edge in the last game. In that game. And then the last game of the season to Indiana, I think, is a loss as well. Because by that point, either the third seed will be in hand if Boston has lost enough, or it'll be out of reach, and Eric Spoelstra will give his players a chance to rest before the playoffs. Miami's assured a playoff spot. There's no denying, however, that this is going to be a special time for the team and their fans. 8 games, 2 weeks. I am looking forward to it. And you're watching history in the making. So please remember that. Enjoy every second of it. You never know what can happen next. We were stripped of basketball for 3 months, and now it's back, and we can really just enjoy every moment of this. It's going to be great. I'm going to be here to help you do just that. Make sure to follow the podcast regularly. I'll be recording a recap after the Nuggets game and every game during all of Miami's deep playoff run and bringing you the latest analysis, as always, from what's going on in Orlando and around the NBA. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app. You'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Let's go Heat.
Yeah! Back it up, Dean.